Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First two reports from Gaza this morning that a further 27 people have been killed by Israeli gunfire and 90 wounded as they waited for food near an aid distribution centre in Rafah. The Israeli military said it fired shots at individuals about half a kilometre from the aid distribution site of the US-backed Gaza Humanitarian Fund after identifying several suspects, and it says it is examining reports of casualties. Now, it's roughly the same location where the Hamas run health ministry says Israeli forces killed 31 people on Sunday. Let's get more on this now. I'm joined by Orly Halpern, who's a freelance journalist based in Jerusalem. Orly, thank you for taking our call this morning. I know you're on the road there where you are in Jerusalem. This happened early this morning, we're hearing. What more do you know about the circumstances? What we hear is that these people were queuing for aid. What do you know?
Well, what we know is that what happens is that, you know, the situation is dire. People are literally starving. And they, because thousands are literally going to get the aid, they start out really early in the morning, even 2-3 in the morning. They start lining up and making their way towards the distribution site. And this site where already a couple of times there have been these massacres is in the Al-Mawasi area, this Al-Alam Square, where there are masses heading towards the distribution site. And then the Palestinians are saying that these are what they call drone copters. They're drones that can shoot at people, that they have been opening fire on people. And that is how you have these massacres where dozens of people are killed. And that is, again, what happened this morning. The Palestinian Health Ministry is saying that 31 civilians were killed this morning, including two women. 200 people are injured, and there are people that are missing. So the situation is really instead of having proper distribution of aid, we have these militarized zones that the Israelis have set up with the Americans, where people are being killed every day this happens.
Orly, the IDF issued a statement saying they fired shots at individual suspects who they say were advancing towards troops. Now, do we have any more information from the IDF? Any further details on their version of what happened?
Yes, I asked the IDF about all the different incidents that have happened over the last week, since last Tuesday when the first massacre took place. And they said that in these cases, there were suspects. There were people that were suspect, and they shot at them. So you have thousands of people, and they have identified in the midst of these people, this is what they say, suspects. And then they open fire and dozens of people are killed. I don't know that they have actually identified any suspects. We don't actually know the reason why they opened fire. We can't know. It could be reasons that are not okay. But this is the reason that they gave. This is the reason that they gave.
So moving then to the distribution of aid, and we know that the UN has been fiercely critical of this new effort to distribute food by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. As you say, it's backed by the United States and by Israel. Is it, though, in any way, shape or form working? Is it getting aid to the people who need it?
Well, you have 2.5 million people in Gaza, and the situation is dire. The thousands that are getting it, there are people that are getting it. Is this going to solve the problem? Of course it won't. Of course it won't. And people are being killed while also trying to get the aid. This is not a system that is working. And some would even say that it's not actually meant to feed them, but more to allay the concerns of the international community so that there will be less pressure on Israel so that it can continue its war against Gaza. Mm. I mean, you have the UN Secretary General who said he was appalled by these reports of people being killed while they're seeking aid, and he called for an independent investigation. I don't think that will happen.
Yeah, I see that just in the last couple of minutes. The UN Human Rights Office saying the deadly attacks on distraught civilians trying to access food and aid in Gaza are unconscionable. And then repeating that call, as you have just said, they're urging a prompt and impartial investigation into attacks on Palestinians trying to receive food aid. It is almost impossible to see how a prompt and impartial investigation could happen under these circumstances.
Israel does not conduct proper investigations of its killing of civilians. I have done a report. I investigated how the IDF investigates the killing of journalists for the Committee to Protect Journalists. And I found that in the 20 journalists that were killed from 1990 until 2023, just before the war, there were no proper investigations. But there was no accountability. It's not going to happen here either. They'll always use an excuse such as, oh, there were suspects, so we had to open fire.
Okay, the UN Human Rights Office goes on to say this morning, and this is just coming through to us, the willful impediment of access to food and other life-sustaining relief supplies for civilians may constitute a war crime. Orly, thank you for joining us from Jerusalem. Orly Halperin there, freelance journalist, who, as I said, is on the road in Jerusalem, so that might explain some of the noise in the background. Just before we came on air this morning, I spoke to Gohar Rabour, who's a consultant surgeon from London, who is right now in the Nasser Hospital in Gaza, where many of the people who were injured this morning have attended. Now, Gohar treated patients injured in Sunday's incident near to the food distribution centre, and I began by asking him what he saw then.
So I've been here now 2 weeks, and Sunday was the most horrific day that I've ever seen in my lifetime. Obviously, it's nothing compared to what these amazing people from Gaza have dealt with over 19 months, and my full admiration is for them. On Sunday was two mass casualty events. The first, from the numbers I have, there was at least 150 to 200 people who came. There was, in addition to that, there was about 30 people dead on arrival. And during that initial event, I operated on four patients, which are laparotomies and gunshot wounds to the abdomen. And then in the evening, so Sunday evening or night, there was a second mass casualty event, which is an explosion. And that's when I actually went down to ED, and it's horrific. You're seeing children with their foot hanging off, amputations at the knee level, another kid shrapnel to the chest, back, another kid, you have to put a chest drain in. And that was just raw. That was just anger by patients, relatives, bodies coming in stretchers. Immediately, these people have died, bodies being taken out. So I will never forget that scene. And that changes you as a person as well.
Is this your first time in Gaza?
Yes, first time in Gaza. It's been a 10-year sort of process leading to humanitarian work and so forth. But yes, this is my first time here.
So what you were seeing were people who were injured not just by the gunfire, because the headline news in this part of the world tells us about what's happening at the food distribution centre. But of course, the other attacks continue as well.
Oh, absolutely. So, I am in this 2 weeks. I've got tons of footage of different areas and the bombs going off in the background and the plumes of smoke. They happen frequently. And you're absolutely right, because I spoke on Sunday, the first mass casualty event primarily from the food distribution center, and those couple of guys I've operated on, and I spoke to them yesterday, and just how, simple open questions, tell us what happened. And then secondly, who did this? And they gave me the answers. Yes, but you get the other incidents with explosions and continuous trauma coming through as well.
Can I ask you a little bit more about what people, patients and their relatives are telling you is happening at the food distribution centres? So, what are they saying?
Sure. So he had gone to the food distribution centre, which is in a safe zone, and he entered the place, he got some food, and as he was leaving and he had left the area, he then said he was fired upon. I asked the question, who did that? And he said this was from an Israeli military tank. Someone came up from that and did the firing. He had gone as part of a group of four friends. One of them died at the scene. And the other three, so him and two others, they had to lay on the ground for 1.5 hours. Did anyone come to help you? No. And then they were carted off like on donkey cart for help and brought to Nasser Hospital. The second guy, who is 20 years of May and a male, he went there and the food had already gone. He mentioned that initially there was some firing from American contractors or American military, but not penetrative injuries. It was more to do with as a dispersion order or so forth. Mm-hmm. He left, and as he was leaving, then he was fired upon. And he interestingly said it himself. Who did the firing? This was IDF and M16 bullets. Now, I know nothing about weapons and bullets, and it's interesting you mentioned that, because when you were operating and when you took the bullets out, and I have footage of this as well, which, you know, I've sent to colleagues and so forth, of operative videos and the exact bullets. The surgeons in theatre had mentioned it was M16 bullets. They know by now what type of bullet. So that was him. So he was both these patients are very clear in terms of who did the firing and what happened.
Okay, so the fact that you're saying it was interesting that he could identify the bullets that the IDF used, and then that's what you found when you did the operation.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely,
So we hear about the hospitals being overrun, controlled in some way by Hamas, the food distribution being intercepted by Hamas. That's why Israel say that they've taken over the food distribution network now. Are you seeing any evidence of that?
So I have no knowledge of anything to do with Hamas. We're here purely as a medical doctor within the hospital setting. There are no issues for me to move around. I'm not seeing anything. You go to theatre, you can go to ED, you can walk around the hospital. I've seen nothing. Mm-hmm. Outside, again, because you're purely focused on within the hospital. Outside, I don't know what's going on. And that's, that's just through what you hear and so forth. But I have zero knowledge of anything to do with that. In terms of the situation in the hospital, it's desperate, absolutely desperate. Examples I can give you, so just simple things, antibiotics, lack of that. When we operate, you use things like betadine, chlorhexidine, antisepsis, there's just lack of that. Patients who are bleeding, usually you have to pack them with big swabs. They're using these tiny swabs. Muscle relaxants. You may have had a general anesthetic or your colleagues. They're using expired muscle relaxants because during operating, those patients will jerk or move. It's just never seen something like this. Mm-hmm. And the key thing is nutrition. There is so much malnutrition. And people can use whichever scores the definitions. So you have this like mid upper arm circumference, yes, or edema of the limbs or the WHO Z scores. I met yesterday the lead for nutrition here at the hospital, and through all these definitions, this is severely malnutrition. There is zero what we call parenteral nutrition, that's nutrition going through the veins. There is zero enteral nutrition, that's feed that goes through the mouth through a tube like an NG tube. So there's none of that. And you will hope, is there any formula feed? And he said, well, there was some 7 months ago where they could just make up feed using a bit of protein, amino acids, some zinc, the vitamins. There's none of that exists. So we can do all these operations on these patients. And the standards say the bowels are not going to open for so many days. You put them on this nutrition through the vein. There is, mm-hmm, none of that. These patients,
No, it's so interesting to hear your direct experience, particularly is it because it's your first time there, so you're seeing it at this really desperate moment. And then you did the trauma operations at the weekend. Then looking ahead into this week, what will your job be as a consultant surgeon from today?
So we're still operating. So even in before this mass casualty event, for these last 2 weeks, there's daily operations. You're in theatre, it's one after the other, and that's on all injuries. So I primarily do the abdominal injuries, and that's a shrapnel going into the liver or bowel, bowel injuries, the ureter, you know, the tube that links your kidney. So there's relentless workload. I myself do other things from a cancer perspective, because in this hospital right now, there is only myself as a colorectal cancer surgeon. And we do clinics, we make decisions. You know, there's young people who have got a cancer which has advanced over these 19 months. Normally the standard of care would be, say, to get an MRI scan. There is no MRI scan in the whole of Gaza. The next step maybe would be to get chemotherapy. There's only one oncologist left in the whole of Gaza who I met, and he's just exhausted. And just that, it's just depressing seeing advanced cancers which could have been operated on, and there's just a lack of everything.
Gohar, is there even pain relief for those people?
Again, difficult. So this was one of the scenes in the resus. They use ketamine as the number one. There is some pain relief, but it's not. It's very unpleasant what you're seeing. You can clearly see kids or just adults in excruciating pain, and you just have to carry on. Like wounds being explored with your finger without any analgesia. A lot of patients are unstable. You don't have time. It's just utter chaos. And it wouldn't be the pain relief which, you know, I'd be expected you do back home.
And in terms of your own safety there, do you live and work in the hospital? You don't leave where you are, I assume.
Yeah, no, I'm primarily just staying within the hospital. And you constantly hear the drones, the F-16s, the bombings going off in the distance. So there is that continuously happening. Yes, there is a risk. There is a fear, which definitely is there. But I'm primarily staying in the hospital.
And you're there 2 weeks at this stage. How long do you plan to stay?
So the plan is for another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So you'll do a month, yeah. Then you'll come out. And would you want to go back, given what you've seen?
Absolutely. You know, I think the next steps for these desperate people, they need a ceasefire, a permanent ceasefire. They need all the humanitarian aid to come in, you know, doors to open and just flood the place with food, nutrition, all those things. And you hope and pray that one day you can come back when there's just a bit more peace and happiness, and then do things. It's amazing with all the trauma. They're asking me to do laparoscopic skills, surgery, and I'm saying you can't do this in a war zone. You know, it's just their admiration for the skills of these surgeons and people, healthcare workers. And you hope one day things are for the better.
Well, Gohar, I'm really pleased that we got the opportunity to speak to you today, and we wish you well in your work there at Nasser Hospital in Gaza. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks for having me.